couldn't quite get a piece of it. Now it stepped back again, kept in again, came in front of the net. Here it is in front of you. He's scared back.
The second half of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290 starts now. Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor, Dave Manuk. It's a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day today on TSN Radio 1290. The Winnipeg Jets host the Minnesota Wild at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Let's head to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to now be joined by Marty Biron, Buffalo Sabres studio analyst for MSG, also an analyst for TSN and RDS. Marty, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
No problem. Thanks for having me. It's a fun time of year now with the World Juniors and, you know, the NHL going, so lots of hockey to talk about, that's for sure.
Absolutely, Marty, and happy holidays. Hope you had a great Christmas with your family. And, you know, starting off with the Buffalo Sabres, you know, obviously they were a big story winning the 10 games in a row, but they've been struggling a little bit as of late. They've lost three of their last four games. They lost their last game 4-1 to the St. Louis Blues. The Sabres have only won four games out of their last 13 games. What have you seen from the Sabres over the last month or so?
Well, the big problem here in Buffalo is their lack of depth scoring. It's Jack Eichel, Jeff Skinner, and Sam Reinhart that's providing all of the offense, even though Sam Reinhart hasn't scored in nine games, but at least he's factoring on the, you know, score sheet with some nice plays and assists. But, you know, after Eichel and Skinner, you're not getting any scoring from your forwards. Maybe the fourth line is chipping in here once or twice. I mean, Johan Larsson, Zemgus Girgensson, those two have played really well. They've got a really good role on the team. But when you talk about the middle lines, when you talk about Connor Sherry, Casey Middlestat, Tage Thompson, you're talking about Vladimir Sobotka, Jason Pominville, who has been, he was hurt the last couple of games. He's probably going to come back in the lineup tonight, but you're just not getting any secondary scoring. So, you know, you lose these one goal games and you go in and, you know, you lose 2-1 and, you know, you lose 4-3. You know, if you get a little bit of help, other than just having your top line scoring, you may win those. So instead of getting just four wins in their last 13, maybe you end up having 6 or 7 wins, you know, and then maybe you're 7-4-1 instead of, you know, kind of scrambling to get some wins right now. So the depth scoring is definitely not there, and I don't know how they're going to fix it, to be honest with you. You know, they may call some guys up from Rochester in the American League, but I think the center position is where it's very concerning right now because Casey Middlestat, although he's got a bright future ahead of him, he may be out of sort right now as a second-line center, so you need to add a center. And down in Rochester, you've got a lot of wingers, but you don't have centermen down there, so it's going to be interesting to see what the Sabres do with that.
You know, Marty, it's amazing what a year can do. This is a Sabres team that won 25 games last season, and now they're already up to 21 this year. You know, obviously expectations have changed. This is probably one of the most patient fan bases in all of the NHL. But are the expectations for the team from the fans that this is a team that's going to be going for it, or is there still an understanding that this is a team that's developing and may not be ready to kind of get to that next level yet this season?
No, I think, you know, in September, everybody was like, let's just pray for some meaningful games in March where maybe you're not in the playoffs, but, you know, you got a 4-point game that, hey, if you win, you get a lot closer. You know, if you beat the Boston Bruins, maybe you're getting within a couple of games of them or whatnot. But, yeah, the expectations are definitely going to change. I think the goaltending has been really solid for the Sabres, although you look at Carter Hutton after winning, I think it was 8 in a row. He's only won one of his last 7, so that needs to change. And there's been some moments where you're like, okay, there's you know, leaky-type goals that have gone in or, you know, around-the-net-type goals that you hope that's not going to continue that way. But the goaltending has been much better. The defense, when healthy, is really solid. They've used, I think, 9 or 10 defensemen already this year, and everybody's played a really good role into solidifying that defense. So the expectations are changing. Now you're sitting in third place of the Atlantic. You're not, you know, scrambling to try to get to a wild card spot. I think that you have to adjust as an organization and as a team to know that maybe you're that much better that you can get in to the playoffs, and then maybe you can even win a round. Who knows? You know, I mean, wouldn't that be fun if, you know, for the Buffalo fans, if in the first round you ended up playing the Toronto Maple Leafs? I mean, they haven't played a playoff series against each other since the, you know, the 99 conference finals. So that would be something spectacular, and it would be a treat for the fans to get back to the playoffs.
Marty, you were a longtime player in the NHL. You covered it for quite some time. I got to ask you, the story coming out of Dallas from yesterday, have you ever seen or experienced anything like that before, or seen that happen around the league before in your time?
Well, I played for the Philadelphia Flyers, the New York Islanders, and the New York Rangers. So I had Mr. Snyder, Charles Wong, and Mr. Dolan as owners, and they seem to always find a quote or two in the papers every year. So, yeah, I've seen that before. But now, these days, it's a lot more rare to see a CEO or an owner come in with just these type of quotes or words directed at their players. Listen, these are players that are trying hard for your team, and they're the face of the franchise. You have to be careful with how you approach criticism, especially if you're not a coach, if you're not a general manager, if you're not a player personnel guy. You have to be careful with that. So I understand the frustration, and especially with the last few years in Dallas, they've had a lot of frustration. But listen, Sergei and Ben have been really good for the Dallas Stars. They're still on pace for, you know, 60, 70, 75 points this year. I think Ben's on pace for over 30 goals. So I think that was a little bit out of line. But again, if you're a CEO, you get to say pretty much what you want, right? And tomorrow somebody else will say something stupid, or will do something stupid that nobody will talk about that quote. We'll forget about it.
We're joined by Marty Biron, Buffalo Sabres analyst on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. And Marty, you mentioned Carter Hutton earlier, and you know he obviously is in his first season with the Buffalo Sabres. And you know, Linus Ullmark, 8 wins, only 1 loss. He's got a .922 save percentage, and you know we know how important it is to have a good backup goaltender here in Winnipeg. With Lauren Brossoit's also got 8 wins, he's been excellent for the Jets. You know, you mentioned you played for the New York Rangers, you played for the Buffalo Sabres, the Philadelphia Flyers, both as a starting goaltender and as a backup goaltender. I mean, how important is it for a veteran goaltender like Carter Hutton to have that backup goaltender like Linus Ullmark pushing him to get better?
No, it's so important. I mean, when I was playing and I was a starter, I used to think, like, if I can finish the season 8 or 9 games over 500, and if my backup can give me 500 record, that means we'd be in the 90 to 92 point range. Maybe we get, you know, a few bounces here and there, and we get to the 95, 96, 97, we're in the playoffs. And that's like the bare minimum. So, obviously, if you have a backup that can, you know, be 6 or 7 games over 500, although maybe playing only 25 games. So that means that that guy is playing at a, you know, 15-8 type of pace. I mean, that is so important. That helps so much, knowing that the team, the way they play in front of that backup. There's two types of teams. Sometimes there's a team that can be a little cautious because they're not trusting into that backup goaltender to be able to do their job. Or it's a team that doesn't change the way they play. They can take chances. They can go on the attack and try to win games, knowing that your guy back in net is going to make the saves. And I think the Winnipeg Jets are doing that. I've watched Laurent Brossoit play a couple of games, and he seems really quick. He seems in control of his positioning, and to me that is so important. And Ullmark has done just that here in Buffalo. You know, Phil Housley has handled his goaltender really well. You know, early once at the start of the season was Hutton played 4 straight games. You know, after that, it's been, okay, Hutton plays 2, Ullmark plays 1. Hutton plays 3, Ullmark plays 1. Funny, though, the only time that Ullmark struggled is when Hutton was dealing with a little body ailment, and Ullmark played 3 games in a row, and, you know, he gave up 13 goals in 3 games in those 3 straight games. So maybe having to have that little rest in between games has helped Ullmark to just get into a rhythm, you know, playing once a week. But hopefully next year and the year after for the Sabres, he can take a bigger role, because I think he'll be one to watch in a couple of years now for the Sabres starting job.
Marty, with 26 goals in 38 games, Jeff Skinner is looking like an absolute steal of a trade that the Buffalo Sabres made with the Carolina Hurricanes. How is he? We know he's doing, obviously, he's fitting in well on the ice, but how is he fitting in off the ice? How is he adjusting to life in Buffalo? And do you see him as a long-term fit? Do you see him signing a contract with the Sabres for a long-term deal?
Yeah, I do see him as a long-term fit. I think he's fit in extremely well. I think he's got chemistry with Jack Eichel, which is so important. He's got a top-line center now to play with. I think that Jeff Skinner had some success in Carolina playing with Eric Staal, but that is, you know, years ago when Eric Staal was much younger. And after Eric Staal, you know, Jeff Skinner struggled because he didn't have a center. And now he's got Jack Eichel, who's a right-handed center. So Jeff Skinner playing the left wing, they've got that chemistry, that easy pass that he can make to the left wing for Skinner to use his speed. And I do believe that Jeff Skinner will be with the Sabres long term. You know, it was been said by guys like Darren Dreger that the Sabres and Skinner's agent were going to wait until the holiday season and a little bit after, so into January, to talk about contract extension. So that probably will start in the next few weeks here, but, you know, as the rules are written right now, Skinner can only sign a 7-year extension before the trade deadline. If he waits until after the trade deadline, he can add that 8th year because he wasn't on the Sabres roster last year at the trade deadline. So if you want to keep Skinner in for 8 years, and if that's what Skinner wants, well, it's not going to happen until the end of February, which is probably why there's been such a delay in the talks and in everything that's been happening.
Marty, just real quick, do you think Jack Eichel should be in the consideration for the Hart Trophy this far into the season?
Well, I think 2 weeks ago I would have put him in the probably top five, top six guys for that, you know, that consideration. The amount of points that he's gathering, it reminds me a lot of what Taylor Hall did with the New Jersey Devils last year. I mean, Jack Eichel right now has got 49 points. He's 11 points up on Jeff Skinner. And he's, I believe, 12 points up on Sam Reinhardt. I mean, those are his teammates. So the team really relies a lot on Jack Eichel. Now, the bad performances of the team and the losses have not helped him. But I think that at the end of the year, if the Sabres keep up the pace that they're on right now, he may be in the conversation, at least in maybe the top 7-8 guys, because he's such a big part of the team.
Marty Biron is a Buffalo Sabres analyst for MSG. He also does analysis for TSN and RDS. He played 508 regular season games in the NHL. He also won a gold with Team Canada at the 1997 World Juniors in Geneva, Switzerland. Marty, you're one of our favorite guests of all time, and we always appreciate you coming on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
I'm going to come back just because you didn't mention the fact that in the 97 World Championship, I only played 8 seconds. So I didn't have a big role, but hey, you guys pointed out I had a gold medal, so that's great. I appreciate that.
Absolutely, Marty. Thanks so much, and enjoy tonight's game between the Sabres and the Bruins. And we should mention that your good friend Rick Jeanneret will have the call tonight.
Yeah, he will be back in the booth. He was feeling a lot better the next day. I texted him the next day, and I said, hey, I hear you're feeling better, and he says, Marty, have a good Christmas. I'll see you Saturday at the game. I'm like, okay, he's back at his old self. That's good.
That's so awesome. Rick Jeanneret is one of the best play-by-play voices in the entire game, so we're glad that he's healthy and he's going to be calling the game tonight. Marty, thanks again so much.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
All right, take care. We're going to head to break. When we come back, boys, we're going to give out our 6 awards, the major awards at the holiday break, inspired by Pierre LeBrun, who gave out his awards for The Athletic. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
And he does, but he pulls it out of the zone. Still time for McKinnon to collect. Back in, Nathan McKinnon. If anyone can do it, he can. Holds in the far side. Time winding down. McKinnon up top. One-timer. Score! Mikko Rantanen! 1.3 seconds left in OT. The big slapper beats Miller. And the Avs have come storming back with 3 unanswered, and they win it 4-3 in OT as the guys pour off the bench.
Hi, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor, Dave Minuk, producer Alex Drew Mandel, away from the show this week. Do we know where Drew is?
No.
No.
Do we care? I was going to say, the bigger question is, do we care? The answer, also no.
Drew will be back next Saturday, I think. I hope not.
Well, the way you're doing the hosting,
I like having Shawnee on Saturday.
The way, more to the point, Desi, your hosting is pretty stellar right now.
Top notch.
Yeah. I only appreciate it, boys. I only host, you know, two or three times a year when Drew is away from the show. We did the Wednesday show, Shawnee, just the two of us. It was only a one-hour show. It just absolutely flew by. When you're used to doing 3 hours of radio, 1 hour seems like 15 minutes.
And when you have such quality analysis and co-hosts, it's, you know,
it's a treat. It's a treat to be live on radio with you every time, Shawnee. This segment of the show is brought to you by, who is it brought to you by? Keener Jerseys. This segment of the show is brought to you by Keener Jerseys, located at 982 Portage Avenue at Keener Jerseys. Making a better jersey is what they do. To have your jersey customized or to order new jerseys for your rec team, go to KeenerJerseys.com, Keener Jerseys. They're on your team. Okay, guys, we have about 10 minutes here, and then we're going to be joined by Brian Hedger of the Columbus Dispatch to talk about the Blue Jackets. We're going to go with our top six awards here, the major awards, the Hart Trophy, the Norris Trophy, the Vezina Trophy, Calder, Jack Adams, and Selke. Pierre LeBrun came out with his. Maybe we'll tweet that out from the IC account. He came out with his major award winner. So, Shawnee, we're going to start off with you. We're going to have to go, you know, relatively quick, not too quick, but I'm going to get your guys' choices. I have my choices. So this is our major award winners at the holiday break. We've obviously got a lot of hockey to play here, but, you know, it's the holiday break. It's the end of 2018, so we're going to have some fun with this. So, Shawnee, first off, who is your Hart Trophy winner right now?
Well, right now it's the guy that has overtaken the NHL scoring race. It's got to be Nikita Kucherov out of Tampa Bay. I mean, what this guy is able to do, creative, a lethal shot, playmaking ability. We just saw him here in Winnipeg just a few weeks ago. He's just absolutely a dynamic player. However, if the Oilers make the playoffs, it's Connor McDavid.
Dave, who's your Hart Trophy winner right now?
I'm going with Mikko Rantanen. I think the things that he's doing right now in Colorado are spectacular. And you know, Colorado is an organization that I don't think gets a lot of attention. And I think what he's doing, well, what he's been doing, but specifically what he's doing this year, is definitely worthy of being in that Hart conversation at this point in the season.
Yeah, and I think Rantanen is a viable choice. I think you could easily pick Nathan MacKinnon. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you could go Alexander Ovechkin. You could go Connor McDavid. I think Jack Eichel was in the conversation. I don't know if Eichel's necessarily in the conversation right now, but I'm going with you, Shawnee. Nikita Kucherov, for me, is my Hart Trophy winner. Mark Scheifele as well, guys. I mean, for me, Mark Scheifele has to be in the Hart Trophy conversation. Five game winners, three of them in overtime. I mean, he's been the Jets' best player. Him and Blake Wheeler have been the Jets' best players. So for me, Scheifele would probably be my runner-up, but I'm going to go with Nikita Kucherov. As you mentioned, Shawnee, leading the NHL with 61 points right now, the Tampa Bay Lightning first overall in the NHL. Okay, boys, next up, the Norris Trophy for best defenseman. Shawnee, who you got?
I'm going out east to Toronto, and I'm going to give it right now to Morgan Rielly. He's a plus 26. He's putting up incredible points on a very offensively skilled team. He runs that power play. He's a master of the stretch pass, which is a big part of the Leafs game. He can thread it along with Jake Gardner, and he's just putting it. And he plays with Ron Hainsey. So,
Ronnie Franchise?
That's right. Ronnie Franchise.
Hockey related Ron?
HRR. So I'm going with Morgan Rielly, having an absolutely stud of a season in Toronto. Runner-up, the guy we just saw here on the back end for the Flames, Mark Giordano. Absolutely impressive.
I like it, Shawnee. Dave, who you got for the Norris?
I'm going out east as well, but I'm going with the defending Stanley Cup champions, Washington Capitals. I got John Carlson. I like him. I like his game. He's got 6 goals, 31 assists right now for the Capitals. He's another player who I don't think gets a lot of recognition for what he does on the back end, but to me, he's a guy who I would look to right now.
Guys, I'm going with Mark Giordano. Shawnee, you mentioned we just saw him a couple of nights ago. I mean, this guy's 35 years old. He's got 6 goals, 36 points in 36 games. He played 25 minutes against the Jets. A couple of games before that, he played 28 minutes against the Tampa Bay Lightning. He's playing big-time minutes for the Flames right now, and he's excelling at the ripe old age of 35. So I'm going Giordano. For me, Morgan Rielly would probably be the runner-up. And, you know, I know there are some people out there who, you know, think that maybe it should be John Carlson.
I'm one of those people, actually.
Well, yeah, he's sitting right there.
And
yeah.
What I mean is you're not the only one that's saying John Carlson. So I realize this year it's a little bit more wide open. We expected guys like Brent Burns and Erik Karlsson to be in the conversation, and they're not right now. Another guy, by the way, that I think should be talked about more as a Norris Trophy contender is Chris Letang. I've mentioned him before on the NHL This Week show. He's having a great season like he does every year with the Penguins as long as he can stay healthy. So moving along here, boys, Vezina Trophy. Shawnee, who is your Vezina Trophy winner at the holiday break?
I'm sticking in the same dressing room, and I'm going to give it to a guy who's actually out right now, really, announced today with a groin injury day-to-day, Freddie Anderson, having an absolute stellar season once again for the Maple Leafs. He's so important to their success. I mean, Garrett Sparks is a mildly proven backup, but so much pressure rides on Freddie Anderson, and we're going to see now how the Leafs can hang without him.
I like that pick. Dave, Vezina Trophy.
I'm going with John Gibson over in Anaheim.
He's my runner-up.
I think, to me, he's a player who's doing things right now. This is an Anaheim team. I think they have 97 goals for, which is, you know, well back, but he's got them right now in the first wild card spot. So I think without John Gibson, that Anaheim team is in real dire straits, and I think he's, to me, the Vezina winner.
Boys, I'm going with Marc-Andre Fleury, and I don't know why more people aren't talking about Fleury. He's got the most wins in the NHL with 21. He's played the most games in the NHL, and he has the most shutouts with 5. Mm-hmm. And I realize that, you know, the Vegas Golden Knights didn't have the best start to the season, but they're starting to come along here, and you know, I think Fleury is playing too much right now. I don't think it's healthy for any starting goaltender in the league to play more than, you know, 65 games, and right now he's on pace to play 70 games, but for me it's Marc-Andre Fleury. John Gibson, Dave, is probably my runner-up for the Vezina. I like the Freddie Anderson pick as well, and David Riddick, guys, if he keeps playing like this, he might be in the Vezina Trophy conversation. I just don't know if he's played enough games. I think he's played 21 games now, so let's move along here. Calder Trophy, I don't even know if we really need to get everyone's...
I was going to say, why don't we all just say it together?
Yeah, it's Elias Pettersson. I think Miro Heiskanen for the Dallas Stars should be in the conversation as well. Heiskanen is playing big-time minutes for the Stars on the back end. He's playing, you know, 20, 21, 22 minutes a game. As a rookie defenseman, that's not easy to do, so I think he should be in the conversation as well. Dave, let's move along here to the Jack Adams Trophy. Or let's start off with Sean. Jack Adams Trophy, who do you got, Sean?
I'm going to go with Bill Peters. I'm going to go to Calgary. I mean, the absolute tremendous job he's doing. Calgary is playing a great style of hockey right now. They're leading the Pacific Division. I mean, we just saw the way they're able to move the puck, the creativity, the speed at which they play, the defensive prowess. I mean, he's got that team running on all cylinders, and they look good.
Dave, who you got? Jack Adams Trophy at the holiday break.
I got the guy who's got his team right now third in the Central with the Colorado Avalanche, Jared Bednar. I think the things that he's doing in Colorado will at this point again, will earn him that, that title.
The turnaround is just crazy.
Jared Bednar's an excellent coach, so I like that pick a lot, Dave. I'm going to go with Sean Assor. I'm taking Bill Peters right now. The way this Calgary Flames team is playing, they're only 1 point behind the Jets for the top team in the Western Conference, so I don't think anybody expected the Flames to be this good, so I'm going with Bill Peters in his first year as Flames head coach. Also a shout out to Phil Housley. I realize that the Sabres, you know, have only won 4 of their last 13 games, but the Sabres won 10 games in a row, and they've almost already won as many games as they won all of last year. So I think Phil Housley's done an excellent job in Buffalo. Boys, we have one more major award to give out, and it's the Frank Selke Trophy for Best Defensive Forward. And I think there's a good chance we're going to see a new winner this year. Shawnee, who you got?
I liked your pick, Ezzy, and when I did mine and I opened up your email, I saw we were agreeing. Once again, we're going to our Finnish friend in Florida, Alexander Barkov, an absolute stud centerman. He plays heavy, heavy defensive minutes and is an offensively gifted player. I mean, minimal penalties he takes going up against some top line top opposition, I should say. What a treat to watch.
And Shawnee, he only recently just took his first penalty of the year. 36 games. He's only got 2 penalty minutes, so I think there's a good chance that Alex Barkov also wins the Lady Byng Trophy. And yes, it is early. We have lots of hockey to play, but Barkov has never taken a lot of penalties. But the fact that he went the first 34, 35 games, whatever it was, without taking a penalty is truly impressive for a guy that plays this much. So I'm going with Barkov for the Selke and the Lady Byng. Dave, you going with Barkov or you have someone else?
No, I think when we did this at the beginning of the season, I believe my pick was Patrice Bergeron, which is usually an easy pick because he pretty much wins it every year. But I think at this point I would have to go with Barkov as well. I think just based on the things he's done, obviously Bergeron's missed a number of games for Boston. So I think based on Barkov's play through 36 games, I'm going to give it to him.
And there's a lot of other good defensive forwards, guys. I mean, Sean Couturier is a guy, even though the Flyers are not most likely going to be a playoff team this year, Couturier has a lot of people talking about him as a Selke Trophy winner. I think another guy that needs to be mentioned, a runner-up for me, if you will, is Braden Point.
Yep.
I mean, Braden Point, you know, has 20-plus goals already this year, but he's an excellent two-way forward. He's a guy that, you know, is always back in the play, and, you know, he's good at creating turnovers and and all of that. So former Moose Jaw Warrior Braden Point, I think, is also in the Selke Trophy conversation. But I think right now, guys, Alex Barkov of the Florida Panthers is your clear-cut favorite right now for the Selke Trophy. All right, boys, that was fun.
That was fun. We Billy Blanks double time that. That was good.
All right, we're going to pay some bills right now. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Brian Hedger of the Columbus Dispatch to talk about the surging Columbus Blue Jackets. It's a Winnipeg Jets game day, a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on the home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
We are back live on TSN Radio 1290. It's a legal curve. It's a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Wild puck drop at 3 o'clock today. Huss and Rick coming up with the afternoon ride at noon. And then Kevin Owen friends have the Manitoba Building Trades Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 2. Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Columbus Dispatch in Columbus, Ohio, he covers the Columbus Blue Jackets. Brian Hedger, thanks so much for joining us today on the show.
Hey, good to be here, guys.
Brian, we got to start off with the Breadman. You wrote about Artemi Panarin, and you wrote about his nickname recently for the Columbus Dispatch newspaper. Panarin has obviously been a hot topic throughout the season. He's a pending UFA. He's in the last year of his contract, and I don't know if you caught any of the interview with Dan Milstein on TSN 1050 Toronto yesterday with Pierre LeBrun, but Dan Milstein mentioned that Artemi Panarin is going to be talking with Dan Milstein about his future. I guess, first off, you know, looking at the Columbus Blue Jackets as a whole, they lost the game last night to the Toronto Maple Leafs 4-2, but prior to that, they won four games in a row and had been on a pretty good winning streak there. How have the Columbus Blue Jackets organization been treating the whole Artemi Panarin situation? Because there is a chance that this will be his last year with the Blue Jackets.
Yeah, there's definitely a chance that this could be the last year with the Jackets. I mean, listen, they want to keep him. So they would like to do everything they can to keep him in Columbus and sign him long-term, because as you can see, the way that he's been working with that top line with Pierre-Luc Dubois, with Cam Atkinson, the three of them most nights form a really dangerous trio up at the top there, a dangerous line. When they've got it clicking, you know, they are among the absolute best in the NHL. Nobody talks about that. Hardly anyone talks about that outside of Columbus. Everyone talks about the great lines from other places, and they are wonderful, awesome lines, but these guys deserve to be talked about as well, the three of them. And that's one of the things that was mentioned in that interview that you referenced, which was basically information that came out about a month ago that we reported as well when we talked to Dan Milstein after he had an initial meeting with Jarmo Kekalainen, the GM of the Blue Jackets in Detroit, basically saying, hey, we're going to take that bye week leading into the All-Star game and talk about business, talk about the future at that point. And so then, you know, whatever. But basically, those three guys have been really good. And in that interview, Milstein said again that Artemi likes it in Columbus. He likes playing with Pierre-Luc Dubois, you know, and I know he likes playing with Cam Atkinson as well. Those three guys get along really well. And I think they know each other pretty well on the ice, and all three of them help each other out, you know, offensively. So I think the Blue Jackets want to do all they can to keep those guys together. And if that means waiting to get through that meeting that Dan Milstein is going to have in late January with Artemi Panarin and seeing what happens then they're going to do that. I don't think they're going to rush into anything, you know, before they know for sure, you know, what's going to happen.
You know, Brian, the Manitoba Moose are currently on the ice practicing for a pair of games they have this weekend, which means Eric Dubois, who's an assistant coach with the team, isn't listening to this interview. But we still have to ask about his son, Pierre-Luc Dubois, and who's in his second season there in Columbus. What have you seen from him as his game has elevated? Obviously, he has 14 goals already this season.
He's just become better and better. I mean, he just keeps getting better. That's a cliche you always hear in hockey. You know, I just want to get better and better. Well, he really is. He's getting better and better every time he steps out there. I mean, he's a force. He's a tank. If you ever see this guy in person, he's 20 years old. He's built like a guy who's about 27, 28 years old, just physically, you know, mature physically. He is just a tank. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. He can skate. And also, by the way, that tank can pass on either hand, backhand or forehand. Doesn't matter. And he's got two excellent line mates that he's working with as well. So he really does a lot of that dirty work down low. You know, he kind of helps create things for the other guys. And he also puts the puck in the net. He's got 14 goals. He had a little bit of a slow start to this season. I want to say a couple weeks. And that's why he's not a point a game player yet, like, you know, statistically. But he's really coming up on that. And I would not be surprised by the end of the year, if he is close to that, because that's what he's been for the last month and a half, almost 2 months, is a point a game player. It's weird to say, guy's second year in the league, but he really is an excellent player, two way center. I mean, they may have found themselves their number one center for years to come with Pierre-Luc Dubois, and you can tell all the coaching that he's had growing up, by his dad. And others as well who've coached him. I mean, he takes coaching really well, and I've just been nothing but impressed by him, ever since I've seen him last year.
Yeah, and Brian, just kind of further on his development. I mean, every game, and you know, every time you watch this guy, and fans watch him as well. I mean, you just got to go back to that 2016 draft, and Jarmo Kekalainen looks just smarter every time you watch this guy. We're choosing Pierre-Luc Dubois over Jesse Puljujärvi, who's struggling to find his game in the NHL as of now.
Absolutely. And, you know, when I talk to Jarmo and to Bill Zito, the assistant GM, and others within the organization about that last year, you know, both on the record and just kind of, you know, casually in conversation. The one common thing that they always bring up is, you know, yes, that created quite a stir at the draft. And they always couch it by saying, you know, no offense to you guys, meaning the media and the analysts and stuff, but they're like, how many times did you guys watch them play as compared to how many times did we watch them play? And so, you know, basically the board for the Blue Jackets had Pierre-Luc Dubois higher than Jesse Puljujärvi. That's across the board. That's all their scouts that saw them. That's Jarmo. That's Bill Zito. That's all those guys. They all had them ranked that way. And so that when Dubois was available and so was Puljujärvi, it was a no-brainer for the Blue Jackets. And they're like, they didn't even think about what the other reaction was going to be. They're like, this is our guy. He is a dominating two-way center who could, you know, physically develop into, well, the comp that I always hear now is like a Ryan Getzlaff. I mean, and I see it now. I mean, that they're built very similarly, both big, strong, power forward type, power skating centers who can dominate a game, and they can also distribute and score goals. Very similar players. And so when you got a guy like that sitting there and you need a top-line center, I mean, I know they had Wennberg, but even if he hadn't become a top-line center, a top-six center, I mean, say Wennberg had stayed up there as number one, you'd still have a 1-2 of Wennberg and Dubois. That's what they were looking for. And even though it didn't happen right away, they knew what they had in this guy, and we're all seeing it now.
We're joined by Brian Hedger, formerly of NHL.com, now with the Columbus Columbus Dispatch, covering the Columbus Blue Jackets on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. And, you know, Brian, we have to ask you about Sergei Bobrovsky, obviously a pending unrestricted free agent as well. And he was criticized for the way he was playing earlier on in the season, but you look at the way he's been playing as of late, you know, picks up a shutout against the New Jersey Devils back on December 23rd, and then he had a shutout a couple of games before that against the Vegas Golden Knights. He was in net for the Blue Jackets yesterday in that 4-2 loss, so maybe not his best performance yesterday, but he's got a couple of shutouts in his last five starts. And I guess the question I have for you, and I know you won't necessarily have the answer for it, but do you still think there's a chance that Bobrovsky can remain with the Blue Jackets, or is it still status quo? The Blue Jackets are going to keep Bobrovsky, and then he might still sign with another team in the summer.
Yeah. If you were to ask the management for the Blue Jackets, I almost guarantee you the answer is going to be the same as it always has been. which is, you know, we love Sergei and we want to keep him. That doesn't tell you a whole lot. It just tells you that they, you know, they would like to keep him at that whatever terms that they would like to keep him. But it doesn't tell you a whole lot about the inside of, you know, what's going on with the negotiations there. And those are hard to find out necessarily. I mean, you know, we heard several weeks ago, you know, Kevin Weeks came out and who happens to have the same agent, Paul Theofanos, as Sergei Bobrovsky. And it basically said that Bobrovsky's camp, not necessarily saying Sergei himself, but, you know, Bobrovsky's camp and the Blue Jackets front office, you know, that the relationship has deteriorated and then, you know, all this kind of stuff. We're just going to have to wait and find out on this one. The gut feeling I have and what they have said all along is that they would like to keep him. I have a feeling that they would like to keep him for the rest of this season, for sure. You know, talk about maybe the off season and see if they might be able to get a deal done before July 1st comes around next year. Because after that, you know, you could still sign them, but you can't get the 8-year deal instead of the 7 or whatever. But, you know, I just think they want to ride it out, see what happens this year, talk to him in the off season, and take it from there. And if he does end up signing elsewhere, then they're going to have to, you know, maybe they turn inward. I mean, if you look at this organization, you know, a lot of teams get talked about with prospects, and the prospects are always centers and wingers and people who can score and dynamic defensemen. This organization is loaded with goaltenders, like really good goaltending prospects. Now, granted, they're prospects, but you got Elvis Merzlikins, who's over there, Latvian, playing in Switzerland right now and just won the Goaltender of the Year award, I think, from last season over in that league. Last season over there, so he'll come over to North America next year. You got a kid that they just drafted in Finland, you know, Veini Veivalainen, who is tearing it up again after winning the Finnish league last year. He's having another great year this year. You know, and you got Daniil Tarasov is over in the KHL, or I don't know if he's in the MHL now. He's over in Russia right now, young guy, he's younger. And they have a guy who's like 21 years old, you know, playing in Cleveland, in Matisse Kivlenix, another, you know, Latvian. So they've got a ton. I talked to Manny Legacy, the goaltending coach this year for the Blue Jackets, and basically asked him, you know, about the system. And the first word he used was ridiculous. You know, ridiculous talent. So, do they turn inward? I mean, this is, and you also have you know, Jonas Korpisalo sitting there. He's not old, you know, as the backup right now to Bobrovsky. So, that's going to be an interesting situation to watch as we go forward to see where, you know, Bobrovsky ends up, how much he gets, and how many years. Because he's not old, but when you start talking about those long term contracts. You know, do you want a guy who's making, you know, let's say $10 million a year around when he's 39 years old? You know, stuff like that, 38, 39 years old. So we just got to watch for that one. Interesting, though.
Brian, I have to ask you about Ryan Murray. He seems to be having a bit of a bounce back season after the injuries he suffered last year. Just, you know, when you use a word like steady to describe a defenseman, tends not to get you very many headlines. But just how important has he been for Columbus this season?
Well, you need a guy who's steady. You need several guys who's steady. They got another one in David Savard who's pretty steady. And another one coming up who's played really well this year that nobody's talking about, and Scott Harrington, who already has 11 points for him, you know, through 33 games, pretty good. But when you start talking about Ryan Murray, I mean, he's kind of like, he's not going to score. He's never going to score a ton of goals. He's not that kind of defenseman. He's not a Seth Jones or a, you know, Zach Werenski type of offensive defenseman, but he definitely has some high-end offensive ability, especially in the way he sees the ice. He makes some very interesting and really good plays that almost never get mentioned, but they help keep the puck in the zone. I mean, he'll be at the right point or left point, or I mean, he plays left point, but you know, they're all over the place. But he'll be out there at the blue line. Two guys will be coming in on him. There's an easy pass right down the wall. And you think, okay, he's just going to do it there. Instead, he sends it diagonally to open space where there's nobody. And what ends up happening is, you know, two Blue Jackets who are over there converge on it with, one defender, and the puck stays in the offensive zone. Those are the kind of plays that Ryan Murray is so good at. I mean, he is just so good at seeing the ice, seeing where open space is, seeing what the best possible play would be for your team. And he's done it, over and over and over again. So he does pile up a lot of assists. And I think it will be very interesting if he can stay healthy. That's always been the thing with him, is that he's always had these freak injuries that have knocked him out for long stretches of time. And he's only been able to put together one, maybe two full seasons in the NHL. He's at an age now, in his mid-20s, where if he can put together a full season and stay on the ice and stay healthy, I mean, I think you're going to see some pretty impressive numbers out of that guy.
Brian Hedger covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for the Columbus Dispatch newspaper. The Blue Jackets are off today. They played back-to-back games. They lost last night to the Leafs, and then prior to that, they won in overtime against the New York Rangers. Their next game is on New Year's Eve at home against the Ottawa Senators. Brian, thanks so much for joining us on the show this morning, and have a happy new year.
Thanks for having me on, guys, anytime. And happy new year.
All right, thanks again, Brian. Let's head to break. When we come back, we weren't originally going to talk about this, but there's some interesting developments in this whole Jim Leitz, Tom Gilardi, Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin story.
Why? What happened with them?
Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn spoke to the media this morning. Coming back from the break, we're going to talk about what happened yesterday. Sean Shapiro had the article for The Athletic. We have to talk about that. There's a lot going on in the Lone Star State. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. It's a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Wild, 3 o'clock this afternoon. This segment of the show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Boys, we have to talk about Sean Shapiro's article in The Athletic. I mean, was there anything else that happened in the hockey world yesterday? It was a pretty slow Friday. I mean, maybe you were talking about Jake Guentzel's new 5-year contract. But then this article came along. Jim Leitz, the Dallas Stars CEO, asked Sean Shapiro and I believe Matthew DeFranks, if I'm not mistaken, he asked those two reporters to come into his office. And then he proceeds to show them text messages that he received from Stars owner Tom Gilardi. And the text messages that Sean Shapiro receives basically is Tom Gilardi, just absolutely bashing star players Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin. Here are some of the quotes. They are effing horse bleep. I obviously can't say the words here. This is a family program. I don't know how else to put it. This is Jim Leitz saying this to Tom Gilardi. The team was okay, but Seguin and Benn were terrible. Leitz goes on to say, I don't get it. The good news is that the coach got everyone else to go, and we found a way to win, and we were able to make up for their lack of playing. The Stars won their last game 2-0 over the Nashville Predators. The Stars are in a wild card spot right now, 4 points ahead of the Minnesota Wild. So it's kind of surprising that Jim Leitz, Stars CEO, and Stars owner Tom Gilardi are talking like this, during a win. Obviously, Anton Khudobin was excellent in that game. Jim Leitz goes on to say, I am sick and tired and listening to bloggers and others talking about Brett Ritchie, Julius Honka, Gavin Bayreuther, or Taylor Fadun, pick a guy. We're just too good. The fans deserve more, and the owner deserves more. And I share that opinion with the owner. The fans deserve better, and Benn and Seguin aren't getting it done. Until they do, we aren't going to be good enough. I mean, where do we start with this? I mean, today, Tyler Benn and Jamie Seguin spoke to the media.
Good for them, by the way. It was an optional skate, and they took it. Because they could have avoided it.
Yep.
And instead, they chose to get out on the ice, and knowing that meant they were going to have to address the media after the skate.
So let me pull up the quote here, boys, from Sean Shapiro. He just tweeted it out about 15 minutes ago. Benn and Seguin both met with media this morning, and said that they have not heard from Lights during this season. Ben also said he doesn't play for Lights. He plays for the rest of his teammates. And then Shapiro's most recent tweet a couple of minutes ago, Ben also said his quote-unquote phone was blowing up like it was my birthday yesterday.
You know,
I mean, the first question I have here is, why did Jim Lights ask Sean Shapiro and Matthew DeFranks to come into a room and then start to basically lambaste his two star players? Like, what are his motives aside from getting these guys going? I mean, he obviously has embarrassed these two players. I mean, Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin, two of the highest paid players on the team and in the league. They just signed Seguin, obviously, to that long contract. But I guess, what are your first impressions when you read this, and what are your impressions of Ben and Seguin responding to what happened yesterday?
Well, as opposed to why they were called, the writers were called in, it states right in the article. He says right to both Shapiro and DeFranks, no one is writing this stuff, so write it. So he's essentially writing this story. He's just using the scribes to get the words out, but he's just saying no one is criticizing these players, so I'm going to do it, and you guys are going to write it. We were sitting here yesterday as the story was breaking. Mike McIntyre has covered a variety of spectrum for the Winnipeg Free Press, you know, from crime to sports. He's saying he's never seen anything like this. It is absolutely crazy. And you have to dig a little deeper, and you have to think maybe this was discussed personally between management and the two of them maybe a few weeks ago when the struggles were maybe a little bit more evident. And then, you know, just listen, you guys got to shape up. Maybe some video. This is what you're doing wrong. This is what you need. What's the quote? If my kid pulled some of the moves Jamie Benn was pulling in squirts, he'd be benched. I mean, there's some crazy, crazy eviscerations out of this story. It's a hot take.
And boys, I should mention, I mean, the text that I was talking about, all of these quotes are from Jim Lights, star CEO. It's not from Tom Gilardi, but Tom Gilardi also was obviously okay with, Jim Lights would not have gone to the Stars beat reporters unless Tom Gilardi gave him his blessing. So we should mention, these weren't texts. This is actually what Jim Lights said to Matthew DeFranks and Sean Shapiro, who broke the story. I'm sure that Matthew DeFranks has wrote about it for the Dallas Morning News as well. So we should be clear, Dave, that Jim Lights is the one that said most of this stuff. Another quote here, Dave, and then I want to get your take. He's hitting post. Wow, that's what I say about hitting post. Get a little closer to the action. Actually, go to the spot where you score goals. He doesn't do that. He never does that anymore. He used to be a pest to play against. People hated playing against Tyler Seguin. They don't anymore. These guys have been great players, but we are 40 games into the season, and they aren't getting it done. We are going to sleepwalk to another 14th place finish from the bottom and miss the playoffs. I mean, is this not mind-boggling that the CEO of an NHL team would say this willingly to two beat reporters that cover the team?
Yes, there's no other way to put it. I mean, the craziest part is, and again, the Dallas Stars are not blowing the doors off anyone, but they are currently in the second wild.
Well, that's the thing.
The craziest part is
in a playoff spot.
Right, they're in the second wild card spot. I mean, again, it's precarious. It's not like it's secured by a bunch of points. But I would have originally thought. Now, everybody, the conventional wisdom, of course, is that this was simply just to galvanize these players and get them going and light a fire under them because they weren't, you know, the motivation wasn't there. But you would originally think that this would have been an internal discussion. Mm-hmm. You know, to get to this point where you go to the media, the only time you're, I mean, let's be realistic, the team's not doing this because they're like, hey, we want to help the Athletic sell and you know, the Dallas Morning News sell papers and get more online subscriptions. Let's help these guys out by giving them some real dandy quotes. That was not the objective. I mean, let's be realistic. We're you know, the truth is this is
public shaming.
But of course, what I'm saying is that this is the intent of this is simply to use, as Sean talked about, and he's right, use these guys to get the message out. Now, my original thought would have been, obviously, they've had private conversations that have gone nowhere. Now, Jamie Benn said this morning, of course, and as you just read the quote, that he hasn't talked to Jim Light. Now, that doesn't mean that they haven't had conversations through the coaching staff that has filtered up to the CEO and the owner, and they're not happy with the course of those conversations, so they're trying to see a course change or a correction. But, you know, I mean, again, it is mind-blowing in today's day and age to do something like that because I just don't know. Like you said, I don't see how a public shaming is going to do anything. And I know that Sean Shapiro tweeted, you know, that he got a text from someone within the Stars organization saying, we'll see now how these two respond. But at the same time, I mean, again, it's almost mind-blowing to think that in today's day and age, you know, they're, you know, and they play, I think they play against the Red Wings today. So we'll see how the
They do. The Stars and Red Wings play tonight at 7 o'clock, right, in Dallas.
I mean, let me tell you something. Dallas and Detroit was a game nobody was paying attention to before this evening. Nobody, you can tell, unless you're a Dallas Stars fan or Detroit Red Wings fan, nobody in the NHL cared at all about that game.
Yeah, and the entire hockey world is going to be paying 100%. Attention to that game. And coming up on Saturday, January 6th, the Stars are in town against the Winnipeg Jets. You know who the Stars would play if the playoffs started today, right?
The Winnipeg Jets?
I mean, I think this is a fascinating story for many reasons.
It's nuts.
And we have to take a break because coming up after the break, we're going to be joined by Gemma Karsten-Smith, who has been covering the 2019 World Juniors for the Canadian Press. Sean, I know you want to get your 2 cents in here.
Just real quick before we hit the break, both Ben and Sagan, no movement clauses, so we'll see if those stick around for the near future.
Right, and Sean, you have to wonder, you know, if this is going to impact...
How does this affect
the futures of Ben and Sagan? Exactly. How is this going to affect the room?
The players. Ben's a captain of this team.
He's the captain. The Stars are in a dogfight right now. We've mentioned it several times. They're holding on to that last wild card spot, 4 points ahead of the Minnesota Wild. The Stars are in fourth place in the ultra-competitive Central Division. So, I mean, this is something that nobody expected. You know, when you have the CEO of a team absolutely ripping star players to the media, I mean, this is just really unheard of. I mean, it almost makes what happened in Ottawa look like child's play. This is just incredible, and we're going to continue to monitor this story. As I mentioned, guys, we're going to head to break now. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Gemma Karsten-Smith. She covers the World Juniors for the Canadian Press. She's a writer based in Vancouver. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Only two segments to go here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. It's a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Winnipeg Jets host the Minnesota Wild this afternoon. The afternoon ride is coming up right after us in about 25 minutes, live from Boston Pizza. Huss and Rick Ralph will be on for 2 hours. Then coming up at 2 o'clock, it's Kevin Owen, friends with the Winnipeg Jets pregame show. Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to be joined live from beautiful British Columbia, Gemma Karsten-Smith. She's a sports reporter for the Canadian Press. She's covering Team Canada at the 2019 World Juniors. Gemma, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Gemma, we got to start off with Canada's last game. They're 2-0. They win the first game 14-0, two touchdowns against Denmark. And then last game against Switzerland a couple of nights ago, they win 3-2. And in your most recent article for the Canadian Press, you talked about Tim Hunter and how he was stressing to his team that it's a long tournament and they have to use that game against Switzerland as a learning experience. Is the belief in that dressing room and amongst the coaching staff that the best is yet to come for this team?
Absolutely. We were talking to Evan Bouchard yesterday, who's a defenseman for Team Canada. He plays with the London Golden Knights, and the London Knights. Out in Ontario, and he's a Edmonton Oilers prospect, and he was saying that this team knows that they have a higher gear, and they know that they can reach that gear if they just keep working hard, keep playing together, and they're ready to go in what's guaranteed to be their two toughest games yet.
I have to ask you first, are you sick of Pitbull's Don't Stop the Party?
It was definitely stuck in my head for several hours after that game, and it's a song I haven't heard since, like, college, so I was surprised to be hearing it so much the other night.
What has it meant for the, on a serious note, what has it meant for the Canadian players to get messages? I saw that they got a message from Connor McDavid, Sidney Crosby. What has it meant for this team to get those messages and, you know, just as the tournament got going?
Yeah, I think that they were really excited about it. They had phone calls with both Connor McDavid and Sidney Crosby, and then Manny Malhotra, who is an assistant coach with the Vancouver Canucks, actually came into the room and spoke with them before the tournament got going. I think having those voices of experience, hearing from guys who were so successful in the NHL, but really started their careers in juniors and have played in this tournament, I think it meant a lot to them to just hear what they went through and what they can expect here this week.
Yeah, Gemma, I personally love the approach head coach Tim Hunter used when discussing Alexis Lafreniere, saying that, you know, we watched video, there was a lot of circles in his game. They're not proud of like of the way he's playing, the style. You know, they were saying it was almost like a free skate he was out there against Denmark, and he goes, we're going to show him some video, and if we don't see what we've asked him to do, we're going to limit his minutes. I personally love the hard love approach.
Exactly, and I think the guys are actually loving it too. What we've heard from them is that they like how honest he is with them. That they always know where they stand. It's kind of that, we're going to tell you something, we're not going to tell you twice, and you better get it right. Everyone on this team knows that it is a team stacked with skill. So you're not only are you fighting to win, but you're fighting for your spot every night as well.
Gemma, we have to ask you about Maxime Comtois. We mentioned the opener against Team Denmark. Canada wins 14-0. Comtois joins a small list of players who have scored four goals in a game. This is a guy who was a second-round draft pick of the Anaheim Ducks. Many people thought that he would go much higher than that, and he's obviously the captain of Team Canada. But after two games, is this just a player that is embracing being the captain of the team, and he knows that even though he doesn't have to score every game, he is going to be relied upon as one of those 19-year-old veterans?
Is he ever? Seeing Maxime Comtois here at the tournament has been just a pleasure. He is, I think he's really reveling in his role with this team as a leader, as the only returning player from last year's gold medal winning squad. He's getting the guys really pumped up, like just literally screaming before games as they head out onto the ice, getting them really jazzed. He says he took a little inspiration from his favorite UFC fighters. But he's great on the ice. That whole line of Comtois, Glass, and Tippett is just tearing it up. They're really performing well together. Both Glass and Comtois each have 5 points so far in this tournament. Tippett has 2 goals. They're really playing together and being the leaders that this team of young men needs.
You know, I have to ask you about Morgan Frost. He was a player considered on the bubble to make this team and, you know, has his first hat trick. He hadn't had a hat trick in junior, but he gets his first hat trick in this tournament. What has it meant for him for his development and for him to be part of this Team Canada team and one who's a player who's being relied upon now?
He looked absolutely stunned after that game. He just had the biggest grin on his face, and it was pretty cool to see. He's really come into his own over this tournament, I think. I saw him out at the summer showcase in Kamloops, and he seemed a little bit more reserved. But right now you're seeing him really skate and play with freedom, and he's obviously doing great things for this team.
Gemma, you love hearing the stories of the guys that you were just talking about, the bubble players that find their way onto the team and then really carve out a role for themselves. One guy, the 13th forward selected on the team, Mackenzie Entwistle, I mean, he's been referred to as a Swiss Army player, which is such a high compliment for guys, especially in short tournaments when you can be used in such a variety of situations. But, you know, against the Swiss, up a goal, there he is, taking a key defensive face-off against a team up 1 goal. He kills penalties. I mean, he's got 2 goals so far in the season. Pardon me, in the tournament. I mean, what more can you say about this guy who's just proving his value as the tournament rolls along?
Absolutely. I think it would be expected to see him take on a bit of a different role tonight against the Czechs. We don't know what the lineup looks like for sure yet. Team Canada isn't doing a pregame skate today, so we won't know until game time. But I think that he's proven himself in the last game, and it's great to see. He said that he's not thinking too much about being the 13th forward on this team because the 13th forward on last year's team is the guy who scored the game-winning goal in the gold medal match.
Mm-hmm. We're now joined by Gemma Karsten-Smith, sports reporter with the Canadian Press. She's covering the 2019 World Junior Tournament in Vancouver and Victoria, British Columbia. Gemma, you mentioned that there isn't going to be a pregame skate today. Team Canada, that is, plays the Czech Republic. Game time is 7 o'clock. You can hear that game, of course, on TSN Radio 1290. We don't know if it's going to be Michael DiPietro or if it's going to be Ian Scott. I guess, two-part question, who do you think will get the start, even though it hasn't been announced. And how important is Ian Scott going to be in support of Mikey DiPietro? Because even though DiPietro had the shutout in game one, Ian Scott had to come up big in that game against Switzerland.
Absolutely. I think Michael DiPietro's story is probably my favorite of these games. The guy was cut from last year's team. He set a reminder on his phone to go off on random days throughout the year saying, just got cut from junior's team. And he says it really fueled him. So it's neat to see him having so much success in that first game against Denmark. That said, Ian Scott was amazing against the Swiss. He had to come up big and make a few big saves for his team. And Coach Tim Hunter said that he'll rely on them both. He said that Michael DiPietro is his guy, so I think that we probably will see a lot more of him in this tournament. But he's also said that they're both equally capable, and it's always good to have two amazing goalies.
So, Jim, as someone who's on the ground, what's the buzz been like in BC right now over the tournament?
It has been surprisingly fantastic. I was a little bit concerned about what attendance would be like at these games, especially seeing the dismal turnout last year in Buffalo. But it seems that coming west has been a great move for this tournament. We've got a fairly full arena, probably as full, if not more full, than I see on most nights covering the Canucks. We had 16,000-something for the first game on Boxing Day, 17,400 for the game on Thursday. These are the Canadian games, of course. And you see all sorts of people wandering around downtown in their Team Canada finest, whether that's a jersey, a toque, or even a onesie.
Now, Gemma, just to go back to Mikey DiPietro, you mentioned he didn't make the team last year, but now he's been anointed as the number one goaltender by head coach Tim Hunter. Is it extra sweet for fans in Vancouver, especially fans of the Vancouver Canucks? He's, of course, a Vancouver Canucks draft pick, but is it just that much sweeter for Canucks fans to watch this guy excel for Team Canada, knowing that he's going to be playing for the Canucks, you know, 2 or 3 years down the road?
It really is. The Vancouver fan base is a fan base that's really loving our young players right now, cough, Pedersen. And to see someone who hasn't quite made it to the team yet having such success is really special for the fans out here.
Gemma Karsten-Smith is a sports reporter for the Canadian Press. She's covering Team Canada at the 2019 World Junior Hockey Championship. You can read her work in the Canadian Press and online at canadianpress.com. Gemma, thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy tonight's game and enjoy the rest of the tournament.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, we're going to head to break. We have one final segment to go. Shawnee Assor has to leave us. Shawnee, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks
filling
for
in for Drew Mandel.
Love it. Drew's chair is comfy. This is a comfy chair.
Enjoy the game this afternoon. We have one final segment. We're going to talk about Pavel Datsyuk, Dave. There were some rumblings earlier this week that Pavel Datsyuk might be making a return to the NHL. His agent has denied those rumors, and it looks like Pavel Datsyuk is not going to be returning. But I want to talk about Pavel Datsyuk's legacy and whether you think that he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, because I sure as hell think he is a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's one of the most dynamic players to ever play the game. We're going to head to break now. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Final segment here on TSN Radio 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Shawnee Assor has left.
Has it been you and I the whole time?
He's got to head over to Bell MTS Place.
He's got work to do.
Afternoon game.
He's a busy guy.
We appreciate Shawnee joining us this morning. Drew Mandel, of course, off this week. He'll be back next week for our first show of 2019. You know what's coming up, Dave?
What's that?
Our 10-year anniversary show.
I can't believe I've already been on the radio for 10 years.
10 years.
Wow.
February 9th, 2009 was our first show.
Well, I remember for the 8-year anniversary, you got a huge cake, which was hilarious because there were four of us in the studio and you got a cake for like 40 people.
Yeah, it was a Safeway cake for like 50 people.
So I can only imagine what you're going to do for the 10-year anniversary.
I was eating that cake for at least a month after the show.
Absolutely. There were things growing on it, but you were still going to town.
So coming up, look forward to that. We're going to have a lot of great segments and guests prepared for that show, our 10th anniversary show. This, of course, is our last show of 2018. coming up right after us here on TSN Radio 1290, the afternoon ride with Andrew Hustler Patterson and Rick Ralph from noon to 2, and then at 2 o'clock, the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show with Kevin O and friends, 3 p.m. puck drop here on TSN Radio 1290, the Jets and the Wild. The Jets looking to get some revenge on the Wild for what happened there at the end of November. There was the brouhaha, the kerfuffle.
The Andrew Kopp injury?
At the bench, yep, the Andrew Kopp injury. He's obviously back in the lineup playing on the fourth line with Mason Appleton and Jack Roslovic. Dave, no pregame skate today, and there aren't pregame skates on games in which the game is in the afternoon. So we don't know who the starting goaltender is going to be. There aren't going to be any changes, though. We know that. I mean, is there any chance it's not Connor Hellebuck?
No, I think, based on what I saw, it's expected to be the same lineup that they played against the Flames.
So Hellebuck will start in net.
Going for his 100th win.
He was stuck on 99 after Thursday night's game against the Flames. And obviously, Andrew Kopp is back in the lineup. Adam Lowry will be centering that third line between Matty Perreault and Brandon Tanev. Devin Dubnyk is expected to start in goal for the Minnesota Wild. We've got about 6 or 7 minutes left here, Dave. I wanted to talk about Pavel Datsyuk because there was a report coming out of Russia that Pavel Datsyuk might be eyeing a return to the NHL. Now, he hasn't played in the NHL for a couple of years now. He's actually property of the Arizona Coyotes. Believe it or not, there's 1 year left on Datsyuk's contract.
It's amazing.
Because, of course, that contract was traded by the Detroit Red Wings in a salary dump to the Arizona Coyotes. So there was some belief that at 41 years old, Pavel Datsyuk might come back to the NHL. And he's actually still putting up good numbers in the Continental Hockey League. You know, he's not necessarily, you know, a top scorer in the Continental Hockey League, but his numbers are pretty decent. So the question I want to ask you, Dave, is Pavel Datsyuk, we know he's won 3 Stanley Cups with the Detroit Red Wings. I guess the first question I wanted to ask you is, do you still think he could have an impact in the NHL? I mean, we saw Jaromir Jagr playing in the NHL at 44 years old, and Pavel Datsyuk is a guy that wasn't exactly a slouch in his last year with the Detroit Red Wings. So even though it looks like it's a slim chance that he's going to play in the NHL, do you think he could still have an impact in the NHL, whether that's, you know, being a 20-goal, 40-point guy or a 50-point guy? And as far as you're concerned, when Datsyuk decides to hang up the skates, is he a first-ballot Hall of Famer for you?
Well, I'll answer that question first, and I think the answer is yes to me. He is a member of the Triple Gold Club. He is a player who was known as the Wizard, and that was rightly anointed simply based on the things he could do with the puck. I mean, I got the fortune when I was in school in Michigan that I had the chance to watch a number of Red Wings games, and I'm telling you right now, like, to be able to watch Pavel Datsyuk live, the things he could do with the puck were spectacular. And you really did. It seemed like magic or wizardry. And that's hence why it was an appropriate moniker. Because honestly, like, I just couldn't get over his ability to just handle the puck in tight spots and around players and get it to his forwards, and just his vision on the ice was spectacular. So to me, you know, I mean, he has 314 goals, 604 assists, 918 points, and 953 NHL games. So I would put him, you know, with the Stanley Cups, instrumental. Wasn't like he was just a peripheral player on those teams. He was an instrumental piece of the puzzle. So to me, he's a member of the first ballot Hall of Famer.
And we mentioned Pavel Datsyuk has not played in the NHL since 2015-16. He's played the last 3 years with St. Petersburg SKA. He's almost at a point per game this season. He's got 29 points in 36 games. He was a point per game player last year with St. Petersburg SKA. And I agree with you 100%, Dave. I mean, Datsyuk is a guy that, you know, obviously, you know, came over to the NHL a little bit later. He started his pro career in Russia. But what stands out to me about Datsyuk is those playoff years in which he was a point per game player for the Red Wings. And alongside Henrik Zetterberg, They formed one of the most dynamic duos, you know, between the years of, let's say, 2006 and, you know, 2011. And then obviously, you know, his point total started to fall off a little bit. And then, you know, he had some injury problems. And his last 3 years in the NHL, he wasn't able to play a full season. But Datsyuk is absolutely a first ballot Hall of Famer. And even though it might not happen, I would love to see Datsyuk back in the NHL. And I realize that Ilya Kovalchuk has been very disappointing in the NHL thus far this season with the LA Kings, and he signed that three-year contract. And there are some people that believe that Kovalchuk isn't going to complete those 3 years with the LA Kings. He's obviously found himself on the fourth line. He just hasn't been very good for the Kings. The Kings as a team have not been very good. They're one of the bottom feeders in the league right now. But when you think back to those years that the Wings were a Stanley Cup contender year after year, and Datsyuk was putting up 60 to 65 assists every single year. I mean, he had a couple of 97-point seasons. He never hit 100 points. But you mentioned it, Dave, 953 games, 918 points. I know people like to see, you know, 1,000 points, 1,000 games and all of that. But what he's done at the international level, when you talk about the triple gold club, he won gold last year at 39 years old. I mean, Kovalchuk was on that team as well. No NHL participation.
Right. Yeah, so it'll be a bit of an asterisk, obviously.
A bit of an asterisk, but the point is, you know, Kovalchuk at 34 years old, Datsyuk at 39 years old, winning gold. I mean, they weren't the same players that they would have been, you know, back in 2006 or 2010 when the NHL, or 2014 when the NHL was participating at the Olympics. But the point is, these guys were still playing at a high enough level, and they won gold. So that was a huge accomplishment for Datsyuk, something that Alex Ovechkin never did.
Right.
He's never won gold at the Olympics. He won his first Stanley Cup last year. So that's probably the one thing, the only thing that Datsyuk didn't have on his resume. He's got the Stanley Cups. He's got all of the awards. Right,
got
the
a Gregorian Cup.
Well, he really has done it all. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see. He'll probably only play, what, maybe one more year, max two more years. I don't think you're going to see Datsyuk playing at 44 like Jágr did. He doesn't seem like the guy who's necessarily going to play four more years, but I think it's going to be very interesting to see if he is a first ballot Hall of Famer, because I think if you ask most hockey observers, most people in the hockey world that watch Datsyuk in his prime, they would say that he was able to do things that 95, maybe 99% of the rest of the league couldn't do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And to think he was a sixth round pick. And that's one of the things about the Detroit Red Wings that, you know, people parallel the Winnipeg Jets to what the Wings were doing with their drafting. I mean, they were able to find gems late in rounds that most teams weren't able to do. So, you know, Datsyuk obviously is one of those guys, a six-round pick. Obviously, the Jets right now have a six-round pick in Mason Appleton that they would love to see turn into a Pavel Datsyuk. I don't think it's going to happen to the same degree, different type of player. But, you know, it's that idea of, and that's what teams need for success, is that they need to have players not just in that first round drafted that are going to ultimately lead them to the next level or ultimately the Stanley Cup championship, but you need those role players who are going to come in and maybe become those elite players when, you know, they were overlooked as younger players, you know, whether it was in junior or overseas. So Datsyuk is an inspiration to me to young players, I would imagine, just because of the way he was selected and what he was able to do with his time in Detroit.
No question that Datsyuk is one of the most skilled players that have ever played the game. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. It's just a question of whether it's going to be the first year that he's eligible or the second year that he's eligible. And I agree with you. For a sixth-round pick, a guy whose NHL career started a little bit late in life, I mean, he did it all for the Detroit Red Wings, and he picked himself up a gold medal at last year's Olympics. That's going to do it for us. Coming up right after us, the afternoon ride with Andrew Hustler-Patterson and Rick Ralph. 2 o'clock, the Winnipeg Jets pregame show. Jets and Wild this afternoon at 3 o'clock p.m. Paula Edmonds is going to have the call alongside Trevor Kidd. Big thanks to our guests, Scott Billick, Sarah McClellan, Marty Biron, Brian Hedger, and Gemma Karsten-Smith. Big thanks to our sponsors, Bernstein's Deli, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Zappia Group Realty, Linden Market Dental Center, and Keener Jerseys. We'll be back on Wednesday with NHL This Week, and Drew Mandel will be back on next Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thanks to producer Alex. We'll see you next week, folks.